Jeff Sanford and Gary Montgomery are the gun nuts. They believe in America. They fight for your Second Amendment rights. They teach safety, advanced shooting skills, and responsible gun ownership. They just love guns. Guns Over Texas starts now.
Hello, Houston, and welcome back to Guns Over Texas, brought to you by the Voice of Texas, AM 700 KSEV, and Shiloh Indoor Shooting Range, Houston's 2012 Concealed Handgun License Headquarters. As usual, it's Jeff, Jason, and Gary in the studio today, so holster your guns, pick up your phones, give us a call now at 281-558-5738. That's 281-558-5738, and let's talk guns and let's talk all things that go boom.
And none of that monkey business.
That's something else we might
we won't get into that.
Now, Gary, what are all the social media things that you're on right now that you're manning? Tell everybody.
So. Facebook, Twitter, gunsovertexasradio.com. You know,
using the term manning next to Facebook and Twitter is just not quite right.
Why?
Not a lot of man involved in Facebook.
There's plenty of man involved in that. Well, have you been to shootersjobs.com?
Yes, I have. Okay. You got me turned on about that.
Oh, he got you turned on. I'm going to scoot my chair a little further away from you, man.
Yeah, scooting to my left.
He's calling me Baby Duck, too.
So, Gary, what's new in your gun world, man?
The only real new thing is I'm getting more and more excited about Steel Challenge. I shot my third Steel Challenge match this morning with West Houston Shooters Club. We shot it starting at 9 a.m. this morning. And it's, you know, the cool thing about Steel Challenge, there's not a lot of movement, so that's not so cool. But it's a place to really work on fundamentals. And you either got it or you don't. And it can be fast-paced or slow-paced, if you know, depending on how comfortable you are. But I really like it. I think that that it's something I'm going to start doing a lot more of.
And I've promised that I was going to go out there and do that with you. Haven't done it yet.
Nope.
But I know. It's going to happen.
That's because you want to sleep in this morning. Because you would have had to have actually gotten up before the sun came up this morning to come out there.
Hey, man, I wake up at 4:30 every morning during the week. So if I get to sleep till 8:15 on Sunday, got to cut me a little bit of slack.
No,
man.
No, I don't. I don't sleep during the week. So
all right, Gary, I don't want to talk to you anymore. Jason, what's new with you, man? What's new in your gun world?
Nah, just what I was mentioning to you off the air, the inordinate number of people I'm getting called from in my agency and other friends that are calling saying, hey,
can I have an import?
I want a gun. And I am shocked by the number of people. And then when I email them immediately, it's like, okay, well, here's, you know, info on M4s, here's info on AKs, here's infos on pistols, whatever it is. They're like, wow, you got that so quick. Well, yeah, because it's the same email I've sent to probably 10 people in the last 3 weeks. Because for some reason, elections, everybody now has decided that now is the time to go buy a gun. Right. And we joke about that on the air, but I have been bombarded with people wanting information on going out and getting their first and only gun.
Yeah.
Panic buying has begun and will ensue for several months.
And I can say from firsthand experience that you have no idea how much the panic buying has already started.
From going online and looking and going, oh, you can go here, here, and here, and then sold out, sold out, sold out. I was like, well, maybe
nothing
you can.
In stock. I think we went into, at Shiloh Shooting Range, went into the weekend, I believe Thursday evening during an audit, we had 54 handguns in stock. When I called the range this afternoon, there was 11.
Wow.
It's,
you know, for a gun range to move that many guns,
yeah,
because
you don't,
that's a
I
lot.
I mean, that's not what you make your living off of. It's not the gun sell part. It's
no, not at all. And people don't understand that there's not a lot of money in the guns.
Yeah.
Especially when you try to, when, like, we don't mark up prices like you find at other gun shops. We try to stay right in line with, we try to stay right in line with your box stores like Academy.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And so it doesn't leave us much margin.
Right.
We want you to buy a gun from us and then go out and shoot the gun and then come back and continue to shoot the gun.
Mm-hmm.
But it's been a wild week with people coming in to buy. And it's everybody. You know, it's your next door neighbor. It's the 75-year-old grandparents.
Yeah, you've been selling a lot of guns to old people, Jeff.
I saw the picture you posted also.
It was great. Yesterday, 93-year-old Flora Scott came in with her family, and she was celebrating her 93rd birthday by popping off some rounds.
Cool.
And she went back there, and she got it down. I mean, it was...
what did you give her to crank off with?
Oh, that just sounds bad.
She had a nine.
Get your mind out of the gutter.
Hey, you said crank off.
Never mind.
FCC, gentlemen, FCC. She had a 9mm, she shot a 40, and she shot a 38.
I bet a 40 and a 38 was a little stout. I don't know how strong a 93-year-old woman is.
Depends
but
on the woman. Hey,
it depends
she
on
was
the
getting around pretty good. Okay. She was getting around pretty good, and she had no problem handling those guns. It was really impressive, and so we were really happy to have her out. She got to shoot for free on her birthday.
Good for her.
Yeah. But we also had ex-baseball player came in, a guy named Carl Rhodes. I want to give him a shout-out. He played for the Astros, okay. Carl Tuffy Rhodes. He was the first man in history to hit 3 home runs on opening day. Did that for the Chicago Cubs.
Wow.
And he is now officially a Shiloh shooter as well.
Cool.
So it's been a really cool week. And, you know, mm-hmm. Jason, like you said, with all the older folks that have been coming in to buy guns, mm-hmm. you know, every day 10,000 baby boomers turn 65 or
right.
something like that?
Yeah.
They're all coming out and getting guns. And the best part is mm-hmm. is that they're getting training as well. The lessons are booked. We've had to open up new times. We've had to bring in more employees just to handle all the lessons. So if you want to learn how to use your gun correctly, if you want to learn how to operate the gun and not just throw it in a nightstand where it's not going to do you any good, then you need to get some training. And you can get training at Shiloh Shooting Range. You can give them a call. They're open for another 45 minutes today if you want to give them a call and schedule your lesson at 281-444-8930. That's 281-444-8930. And while you're at it, if you don't have your CHL yet, we're running a special on CHLs. They're normally $99 a piece, but if you bring a friend with you, bring a family member, bring your wife, bring your daughter, you get it 2 for $150. So now is the time to get your CHL. Now is the time to get your training. Gary, have you seen an increase in people getting training?
I have seen a huge increase, so much so I'm actually about to do a ladies-only class again coming up here at the end of the month. There's been a big increase. I've actually seen it, strangely enough, you guys know I work in the financial industry in my day job. And, over the last couple of years, I've seen a steady increase in the number of people that have come to me asking me, you know, hey, do you know where I can buy a gun? And of course, I send them to you guys at Shiloh, and they'll ask, you know, well, what about training? I know lots of people that can do training, of course, and some of them find out that I do okay at it, so they ask to do a class with me, and that's always lots of fun. But yeah, I've had a huge increase over the last several years.
So Houston, are you going out? Are you seeking training? Who are you getting your training from? Give us a call, 281-558-5738. That's 281-558-5738. Jason, have you been able to get your wife to come out and do some more shooting lately?
No.
Are you at the date night stage yet?
Well, send her to me.
Yeah, Gary wants to have a date night with your wife.
Oh, that's bad.
Well, that's what you just said. Maybe
no.
Well, he was looking at me when he said that. So
yeah, and I was thinking of the class, not thinking of anything else.
It's still... She
friend.
Is interested. She makes comments about, oh, I really need to do this. I really need to do that. And it's like, all right, let's go do it. Well, I'm busy right now. So I'm working it. I'm trying to get her out there. When she suggested, I have a much better chance of getting it done than in waiting for me to press the issue.
Tell her to take a break from mm-hmm. posting kitty cat pictures on your Facebook page.
She does want me to buy a knife now that she's seen your wife carrying a knife.
Ah. Good. Did she go for the karambit?
No, we're still hashing that out because she's insisting that's not the wife your wife. That's not the knife that your wife showed her, even though that's the only knife that your wife carries. So
well, she also she also stole my zero tolerance knife.
So she might have
shown that.
I like that.
If it was the ZT, then you're going to be out about $240 for that one.
Oh.
But it's worth it.
I don't like it that much.
No.
She's worth that to you, right?
I love you, honey.
Uh-huh, yeah.
Sounds like she's getting a new zero tolerance.
Yes.
I can't believe you're trying to, you know, penny pinch a knife for your wife, man. That's just
wrong. No. I used to buy expensive knives. Trust me. I was the guy who I had my Benchmade auto because, you know, one of the first things you do when you're a cop is you go, ooh, I can buy a switchblade.
And so you go buy one.
And you run out and buy a $200 switchblade. And after a few months of running around and, you know, you're basically out and active and you start realizing that knives get lost every few months or so. And you start going for a little bit less expensive knife. After I broke a couple of Benchmades.
So shortly thereafter, you find yourself buying the $30 gas station knife?
No, not that bad.
Okay. But
$60 Kershaw knife has been with me for like 3 years now. And for some reason, when I pay $60 for a knife,
you keep
I can't
it
lose it or break it. But if I spend $200 on a knife, it's gone. Kind of like the $200 pair of Ray-Bans I had when I first started that lasted about a month till they got stolen. And then you buy a replacement pair of $200 sunglasses, and about 2 months later, they're gone also. But you buy a $10 pair of Exxon glasses, and they just last and last and last.
It's like I like to use Oakleys for shooting glasses, and I have a dog who likes
chewing
to
on them.
Eat Oakleys for snacks. And so he's been through three pair of those.
The plastic tastes better than the Exxon glasses, I'm sure.
Well, it's amazing. You know, the Oakley lenses are supposed to be able to take a they're supposed to be able to take birdshot.
Yeah, they're ANSI rated, supposedly, yes.
Yeah, they are not pit bull rated. As they have not, none of them, none, not even the lenses have survived. So, yeah, that's right. Maybe I need to have some gas station lenses laying around the house. Now, Jason, we talk about Springfield XDs quite a bit.
Yes,
we do. I think they're okay.
They're, I'll put them
they're
in
not
the
my
okay
favorite
catalog.
Gun. Yeah. Gary despises them as he's giving me a dirty look right now.
I don't despise them. I just here's the thing. When that gun came out, it retailed for $275. We called it the Croatian Sensation. It was called. It was from IM Metal. It's still made
the HS 2000.
Yeah,
right?
It was the HS 2000, and it's still made in the same POS at Croatian factory. The only difference is it has Springfield's name on it, and that added $300 or $400 to the cost of the gun. It still has all the same fundamental flaws, and I just can't get excited about it for that reason.
Well, one of the things that we always say is, or that you mention a lot,
I
is that
lot, yes.
You know, if no federal agencies are carrying it, no military is using it,
no
law enforcement is using
it,
then that's got to go to show there's a reason why nobody's carrying
Unfortunately, that has changed.
As we learned through a random news report that I had someone email me just to point out how wrong I was, which is fine. If the listeners can find a mistake I make, I do make mistakes. I'm only
human. It's not often that we make mistakes. But I work for the government.
However, let's point out what agency this was.
It's an agency that has a long and sordid history of gunfighting, traditionally proud, known for the many shootouts, the many criminals they've taken down. And it is, when you think of this agency, you think gunfighter. That's all that comes to mind is gunfighter when you think of this agency.
Actually, no. McDonald's comes to mind when I think of this agency.
Uh-huh. And we know
McDonald's, Wendy's, Chick-fil-A, that would be the Food and Drug Administration.
Yes. The U.S. Food and Drug Administration. I don't know. The article didn't mention that they specifically issue this. It might be a personal purchase option. It might be one of the optional guns that they have. But they did make mention of the XDs that the Food and Drug Administration were carrying when they did a raid on somebody that was selling milk that apparently wasn't pasteurized at the proper temperature.
Because we know that that's really a major criminal offense that requires armed agents.
If you get food poisoning, you know, you'd be a little PO'd about it.
I'll get PO'd about it, but I don't know that's the sort of crime that...
The gun-toting,
I envision guys in lab coats coming in going, look, this stuff isn't up to temperature, and in Houston, the restaurant inspectors don't carry guns.
Mm-hmm. Yet.
Well, yeah.
Well, it depends. I can kind of understand the gun thing. Now, granted, being law enforcement, I'm always pro-law enforcement, but there are many regulatory agencies that people get really upset when you come. Have you ever watched one of those Meter Maid shows? Meter Maid isn't really law enforcement, but you're putting a ticket on somebody's car or towing their car.
I've got
people
upset.
Come out and swing tire tools at them. I mean, there's a lot of personal hatred that goes against some people. And if you're the fire marshal or you're the restaurant inspector, and I'm going to come in there and basically with what I write, I can put you out of business. Mm-hmm. People get real upset when you talk about I'm going to put you out of business.
Well, don't
and
say
they take
it like
it personal.
That.
Yeah, well, obviously you're not doing it that way, but
no, some of them do, and that's why they get shot.
They should be carrying guns because you know the Amish could get upset about the whole unpasteurized milk thing, chase them down in horse and buggy.
I can see
you
it now.
You can't outrun a
horse high buggy. Speed chase. FDA Mounted Patrol.
We're going to break. I'll get back into this.
It's a good thing we're going to break because, Jason, you had a look on your face like something was going to fly, like we were going to have to hit the dump button.
I'm being polite today.
All right, Houston, we're going to take a quick commercial break. We'll be right back with more Guns Over Texas.
Mm-hmm.
Welcome back to Guns Over Texas, Houston. We're talking guns, gear, ammo, CHLs, legislation, anything you want to talk about. You can give us a call at 281-558-5738. That's 281-558-5738. Now,
have you read the Comical lately?
Oh, there was an awful article today.
Yes, there was. It's the front page article.
Yeah.
For the Houston Comical.
It was pretty ridiculous. Stolen guns cause crime or something like that?
Well, there really is a, I don't know that I'm going to call it an epidemic, but yeah, every major city has issues with stolen guns. They mm-hmm. happen all the time. That's where most criminals get their guns. We've known that for years. Now, it's funny that all of a sudden they started pointing that out. When, you know, we've said for years, it's not banning guns that helps. It's the fact that you have criminals who are getting guns and they steal them. Wow, they finally figured that out. But they go on to say that at one point they actually say that the guns themselves cause the crime. And I'm like, no, that's kind of like saying the classic line. It's like saying a spoon made you fat.
Mm-hmm.
That's not what happened. That guy was already going to commit a crime. It's just a question of what tool he was going to do it with.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so that part of the article just, you know, enraged me. But sure, I fully believe that there's 32,000+ guns stolen in Houston every year. Because why? Well, there's lots of guns in Houston.
That doesn't surprise me.
Chad Holly.
Yes.
There are people that when they wake up in the morning and they eat their Cheerios and they watch a little bit of Oprah, they put on their clothes to quote-unquote go to work.
And
they grab a crowbar and a sledgehammer and they go break down doors and steal your stuff.
Yes.
That is what they do.
Five or six houses a day, every day. Exactly. And having lost a gun in a burglary, that doesn't surprise me. You know, that's part of the reason that today I would tell you if you're going to own a gun, certainly if you were going to own multiple guns, don't do a gun lock. Buy a gun safe. Mm-hmm. You know, some sort of residential security container and an alarm system.
I make fun of ADT and Brinks and all those other guys, but in the end, they really are nice to have around
mm-hmm.
because the only way these guys can operate is that they have time.
Right.
Any security device can be breached given enough time. I don't care what safe brand you buy. If somebody has an hour of unmolested time to get in there with a sledgehammer and a pry bar, they're going to get into your safe.
Well, absolutely. Most alarm systems have like a minute before they actually turn the siren.
And that's
or
fine.
30 seconds or whatever.
If I can slow this guy down to where he only has a minute or two to go in there and mess around, because he knows once the alarm goes off, the call gets made to ADT and they're going to call the police. So he's got 3 to 5 minutes in there, realistically, to jack around. 3 to 5 minutes, most safes will keep you out of for 3 to 5 minutes.
Yeah, he's probably not going to get into a safe, but he can get your valuables.
He can smash and grab, which is exactly what happened in my house when my wife's laptop and a jewelry box and some other mm-hmm. stuff, whatever was convenient for him to find in 2 to 3 minutes,
right.
under an arm, and to run out with on foot.
Right.
And fortunately, when they caught the little
so-and-so
individuals,
yes.
No, it was multiple. There was like five of them. But they were kids that would skip school, mm-hmm. and on school days they would sit in the neighborhood and they would wait for people to leave for work. Mm-hmm. When they watched them leave and their car leave, then they would go break into the house knowing that the person had just left. First, they would knock on the door. If no one answered, they'd go around to the back and knock on the door again. If no one answered, they'd kick in the back door. And between 3 or 4 of them running through the house, that's one person per room for a minute to 2 minutes.
Right.
And a minute to 2 minutes, if you look at your watch, is a significant amount of time to dig around.
Right.
They went up into my master bedroom and dumped out my nightstand drawers, I'm only assuming they would have gone to nightstand drawers looking for a gun.
Right.
I'm not dumb enough to keep a gun in my nightstand drawer, fortunately, so they didn't get any of that. But they got jewelry boxes and laptops and things that were easy to carry. Now, since they caught the little fools in a house about 5 houses away from me and arrested them, there hasn't been a single break-in in our subdivision or the one next to us or the one behind us.
Hmm.
3 subdivisions without a single break-in in about 3 months.
Wow.
Again, there are people, that's all they do. If you say you have a dozen break-ins in this area, for the month, it's the same people probably. Mm-hmm. That's their living.
Right.
That's a shame that those people are out there, but more people are buying guns these days, so hopefully we'll see.
It's a bigger shame they won't let you put a bear trap in your house. My attorney told me I couldn't do it.
Now, what I did find
it's your
online,
house. It's your bear trap.
What I did find online.
Say this is firefighter may step on it.
Hey, guns, you know, we all talk gun stuff, but I also talk OC. And as Monty told us last week, the OC
ferry. Oh, that was a rough ride for him.
You know, it's a rough ride, but they do make a thing that interfaces with your standard home alarm, and it's an aerosol can. It's about the size of a hairspray can. You cut a hole off in the roof there, and you actually screw a can of OC spray into the area that you want protected.
Ooh.
And after the alarm You know, you go in, you have about, what, 30 seconds to a minute to put in your alarm code. The alarm starts going off. Once the siren starts going off, if the motion sensor still picks up motion after about 30 seconds to a minute, it OCs the room.
Oh, sweet!
That's pretty awesome.
It is awesome. Now, the only downside to this is you've got to decontaminate everything that's in that room.
I don't care.
But
it's worth it.
The whole thing, like I've always said, it doesn't matter. He doesn't get to win.
Exactly.
And even if I lose because I'm going to spend 20 hours decontaminating that room, he doesn't get to win.
I would be fine with that. Yeah. I'll buy a new couch for that.
That reminds me of there was a South African company, I believe it was, that made a armored car that had blow torches that came up
doors. Yeah. Well, that was one of two options. One was the torches. Actually, I'm sorry, it was three options. One was torches, another was a 30 caliber rifle, and the third was sling blades.
Mm-hmm. I've also seen where they put OC spray in the roof rack going along the top of the vehicle. So the roof rack has six or seven aerosol nozzles on each end of it, and you hit a button and it just fogs the outside of the car.
Yeah.
And then if people are trying to get in by sticking their hands under the door handle, there's taser under the door handle.
Yeah.
So it's you can have a tricked out car, you just can't have it in the U.S., unfortunately.
Yes.
But all those come to mind because...
Is the OC illegal in the U.S.?
I don't know if you could have that rolling down the road.
I don't see why
nobody would know unless you had to use it.
That's a good point. But again, other drivers driving through it with it sucking in their air intakes or their air conditioners, and you cause the eight-car pileup behind you because you left the cloud of OC spray in the middle of the road, that could present a legal issue.
They got to know I did it first.
Well, just like you're responsible for every bullet you let fly, I'm sure you're legally responsible for every drop of OC you let fly.
All right, let's get back to some guns. Now, we've had some complaints to us sent to personal emails and stuff that a lot of people don't understand what we're talking about sometimes.
Okay.
So let's take a step back here and let's describe, I want one of you guys to describe double action and single action guns.
Okay. Double action guns, traditionally what that basically means is that the trigger performs two actions. It cocks the gun and fires the gun, i.e. two actions, therefore double action. Mm-hmm. Traditionally, before that, we had only single-action guns, where the trigger performed only one thing. It simply released the hammer to fire the gun. And so, you know, it mostly referred to revolvers initially. But as time went on, we started putting that same similar technology into semi-automatic handguns. So today, especially a lot of the guns that came around in the 1980s, had what we call double-action, single-action triggers. So
that would be a lot of the SIGs, Berettas.
Yeah, SIGs, Berettas, Rugers, Smith & Wesson, you name it. Almost all of them manufactured a gun that was called a double-action, single-action gun, or double-action only in some cases. And what that meant was that the first trigger pull would cock the hammer and fire the gun. That's double-action. And then every shot thereafter would be single-action because now the slide, in a process of coming back, to extract, eject, and fire, and feed in the next round, would cock the hammer and leave the hammer in the cocked position. So now the trigger worked in a single action mode, and so that's why they had decocking levers on these guns. And the decocking lever may be mounted on the frame or on the slide. Most of them, when they were double action, single action, it was mounted on the slide because that was the easier method to as far as mechanically, the easier way to build a gun, cheaper way to build a gun as well. So, I mean, that's double action, single action. We had, like I mentioned, there's also double action only, where the hammer never stays back. It always returns to a forward position, and that's a double action only gun. SIG has made those for years. DAOs were well known for having, or somewhat infamous for having, really heavy triggers, and were therefore difficult to shoot for a lot of people. And they didn't have to be that heavy. Some of that is born out of the weight necessary to impart energy on the hammer, so we need a mainspring that does that.
And some of that is a lawyer.
And a significant chunk of that is the lawyer. Because, you know...
You can make a smooth double-action-only auto, because Beretta did it, and it was nice.
Well,
it was.
Carr makes a really nice double-action-only.
Yep. Right, and it's a double-action-only
trigger. The SIG DAK trigger, the double-action Kelly.
Yeah, it's much better than their double-action-only.
Right, yeah.
But so, and when Carr was asked to increase their trigger pull weight to NYPD... NYPD said, we'll cancel our contract, and Carr said, cancel it. We're not changing our trigger pull because you can't keep your finger off the trigger. So,
and rightly
good
so.
For Carr.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They've got enough. Well, that was a big contract, though. That's 38,000 officers. That was a big contract.
That was a big contract, and I give them credit for being willing to say,
I'm sure there's plenty of other police departments out there that like to use cars for backups.
And not all of them look at NYPD as being, you know, the hallmark of marksmanship. Training for law enforcement.
I don't know. They can hit innocent bystanders like nobody's business, man.
And apparently shoot clerks, too.
So yeah. It's been a pretty rough couple weeks for them.
Yeah, you had mentioned a minute ago, you were talking about, you know, double action, single action, and so forth, and that there was decocking levers and safeties and so forth on these weapons. Mm-hmm. In the past 24 hours, I have seen two different TV shows where someone is, they have to do the emphasis, I'm going to point the gun at you and I'm going to threaten you and menace you with it.
Yes.
No. And then they say, oh, but now I really mean it when I ask you a question, and they rack the slide and or cock the hammer, and then whenever they get whatever answer they had, inevitably, when they rack the slide, no round comes out. So the gun was not loaded to begin with.
Yes.
But then they pointed at the bad guy, and the bad guy confesses to whatever it was. And then rather than use the decocking lever, the cop reaches up, puts his hand on the back of the hammer, and slowly lowers the hammer by depressing
which
the trigger.
Which is really dangerous. There's a few guns that you actually have to do that with.
But explain the decocking lever for us.
Well, what the decocking lever does is it performs that action for you without having to put your booger hook on the bang switch.
Now, by putting your booger hook on the bang switch, you are deactivating
all safeties. So here's the deal. In most modern guns, actually, in fact, all modern guns manufactured after 1980, they have to pass a drop test to be safe enough to sell. And by drop test, I mean literally drop it off of a shelf like 6 feet tall, have it hit the ground with a loaded round in the chamber, and not go bang.
Mm-hmm.
So the deal is that everybody over the last 30 years started putting things in like firing pin blocks to prevent the firing pin from impacting that round. When you press the trigger all the way to the rear, by definition, and just the way the gun is designed, that there's an assumption by the engineer that that means that you intended for the gun to go bang. So now all of the safeties have been disengaged if you've actually pressed the trigger all the way to the rear. So that means that there's nothing there to stop that hammer if you should accidentally let it slip from discharging that round because you've depress the trigger. So again, you've bypassed all the safeties. On a gun like the Glock, where it's not double action only, it's double action only, but it's really technically a different
thing. I've never really understood how
they call
considered
it
a DAO.
Because
there's only one trigger pull consistently.
Because it's only one trigger pull. It never changes. And remember that before the Glock came along, we had DASA, where it first had this long heavy trigger pull and then a short light one.
Mm-hmm.
And so when the Glock came along, it was all one trigger pull, and that was just weird. Other than something like the Colt Browning system, like the Colt 1911 or the Browning High Power, both of those are considered single action. And if you look at their trigger systems, the trigger stroke is comparatively short, and the trigger and the lever on it only does one thing: it locks the gun up, locks the slide in the forward position, and locks the hammer to the rear. So it can't do anything. It sterilizes the gun once that lever's pushed up. In a AAS or DASA gun, that lever doesn't do that. It only locks the gun up once the gun has been decocked in most cases. There's a few that do something else, but that's a whole other ball of wax for right now. But most of them, you press the lever down when you press or up, depending on the gun. But most of them, you push it all the way down, and it causes the hammer to fall. But in doing that, all it's doing is releasing the hammer. It is actually, the firing pin is still blocked. It can't go anywhere. And there's a few of them, I think Smith & Wesson, the old Smith & Wessons.
Actually rotated the firing pin out of the way. The Beretta does too.
And out of the way, yeah. So when you, if you actually look at the firing pin on the back of the gun, when you press that lever down, you'll see the firing pin rotate up and out of the way. It's breaking the firing pin of sorts, either breaking it or blocking it, depending on the gun.
I've never noticed that before.
Yeah.
You know, I've never been one to really pay attention to how it works.
I know. You just want to go back.
I just want to go out there and make noise. That's all.
I know. That's you.
All right. Now that we've discussed the DASA, because that's something that, you know, we've actually
Well, the reality is
said, I don't know what you're talking about.
Well, if you really want to muddy the water, the reality is there are 7 operating systems of handguns. 7. Right? There's traditional single-action revolvers, double-action revolvers, okay? Then we have single-action autoloaders. That's your Colt Browning guns, 1911 Browning High Power. There are squeeze cockers. Don't see those very often, but that's the HKP7. Okay,
That you have to actually take
You actually have to grip the gun, and there's a lever on the front of the grip. that absolutely must be depressed or else that gun will not fire. Mm-hmm. Because pressing that grip back is what actually cocks the striker in that system.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And then again, in that gun, only the trigger only does one thing. It releases the striker.
That's a pretty sweet gun, by
the
way.
It's a neat gun.
I don't know that I would consider it my personal favorite self-defense gun, but something I would like to have in my safe, without a doubt.
Yeah,
its own fleas.
Every dog's got fleas, and this one
has some fleas.
It does, but we can come back to that gun.
Yeah.
So we've gotten through the squeeze cocker. Now we get into our traditional double-action, single-action gun. So the first time that the U.S. would have seen a gun like this would have been the Walther P-38, where mm-hmm. it had a slide-mounted safety. That gun was so different for our troops that it actually led to a lot of negligent discharges and soldiers shooting themselves because they were used to the 1911 where the control lever was mounted on the frame, and when mm-hmm. you moved it to the up position, that mm-hmm. locked the gun up and put it on safe.
Mm-hmm.
Well, on the Walther P-38, it's the exact opposite.
Yep.
Moving the lever up put the gun into the position to fire.
Mm-hmm.
And because it was a double-action gun, again, something our guys hadn't seen before, when you press the trigger, pull it to the rear, it cocked the hammer and fired the gun. Again, something our soldiers hadn't seen at that time. And at that time, we're talking the 1930s, or actually early 1900s later, but early 1900s, and then by the time the P-38 came around, we're talking World War II. So with the P-38, that's something they hadn't seen before. I mean, you think about it, there were no guns in the U.S. like that at that mm-hmm. time. So that's our introduction to double action, single action. And that developed a bad reputation for that platform for a long time. But then Smith & Wesson came out with the Model 39 and later the Model 59 that mm-hmm. basically adopted the same system where they had a slide-mounted control lever that in its down position put the gun on safe, and in the up position it was ready to fire. And again, they added the feature where, in pushing that lever down, it would decock or let the hammer fall without discharging the gun. Okay, so that's your DASA.
Okay.
Later on, when lawyers got involved,
there was a day before lawyers.
Somebody said, "We kind of don't like this whole single action semi-automatic pistol thing," and so there was an introduction of the DAO system. So it is. And let me go back real quick.
It was the transition from revolvers, which were taught to fire those double action only for years. So police administrators thought it'll be easier if I keep the same trigger pull system.
Right. Well, and then there's also the issue, and I did skip over something here. Mm-hmm. And we kind of hit on it, but we didn't really explain it. And that was the slide cocking issue. Okay. And that applies to pretty much all autoloaders for the most part. In one way, shape, or form, almost all of them are some sort of slide cocking system, meaning that when the slide goes to the rear and then goes forward again, it resets the gun in some manner, shape, or form such that it is ready to fire again. And that's true of your 1911s. If you think about it, the term cocked, locked, and ready to rock comes from the 1911.
That's right.
Okay. So when we insert that magazine, we rack the slide to the rear, that process cocks the hammer.
And then safety up, locks the gun.
Exactly. So the 1911 is a slide-cocking pistol, but so too are almost all other pistols, okay? Anything that's hammer-fired, almost anything that is hammer-fired is a slide-cocking pistol. Even the HK-LEM that we today consider a DAO, technically speaking, in the way that the mechanisms inside of that gun work, it's still a slide-cocking pistol.
It's a single action only.
Exactly. Okay. All right, so we've covered single action revolvers, double action revolvers, single-action pistols, squeeze-cocking pistols, double-action pistols, double-action-only pistols. Correct?
Yes.
Okay. And now we've got the Glock action.
And now we get to the Glock. That's your seventh operating system.
Mm-hmm.
And it's unique in that it's striker-fired. And if you...
Striker-fired.
Striker meaning it's, as opposed to having a hammer that hits a firing pin, which is the way we had done it for almost, 200 years.
Mm-hmm.
Basically, we started using hammers. Actually, we started using hammers as early as the matchlock. Okay,
mm-hmm.
So although the hammer kind of did a different purpose at that point in time. But for almost the first, 300 years of guns, we used hammers. So along comes the Glock in the 1980s, and we go to this striker-fired system. And the whole deal with the striker fired system is that instead of having a firing pin that is hit by a hammer and the hammer imparting energy into the firing pin to then strike the round or the primer to ignite that round, we have just a striker, which is literally just a firing pin that is retarded or otherwise has energy imparted to it by the spring directly. And so in the Glock, you've got a trigger bar that's connected to the trigger. Okay, so when you press that trigger to the rear, there's a bar moving inside the gun, and the back end of that bar is pressing against the front of the striker or a nose piece on the striker, and that pulls it to the rear against the pressure of a spring. That is imparting energy into that system. It's already cocked, in a sense, a little bit just when the slide is forward. And if you notice, if you take a Glock out of the box, typically out of the box the gun is in a decocked state. The firing pin is forward or striker is forward. But the first time you rack that slide, you'll notice that the trigger moves forward a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
And that's happening because the trigger bar is sitting against the striker inside the slide. So what happens is when we pull the trigger on the Glock, if you actually look at the mechanism, the trigger bar itself sits on a shelf inside of a firing pin block or firing block inside the Glock's frame. It moves backward on that block to a point where it falls down and out of the way of the striker, and that's a form in which the striker moves forward. Now, at the same time that's happening, there's a nipple, if you will, on the... I can see the look on your face.
You said nipple.
So there's a nipple of sorts that's on the trigger bar.
How ridiculous is this that three grown men, two of us can't let that go without laughing at it?
Oh, wait. We'll come back to this on come back from...
Apparently, nipples mean it's time to take a commercial break. So we'll be back with more Guns Over Texas.
And it seems that Jeff is busy on the phone right now, so we're back with Guns Over Texas. We've been discussing the operating systems of handguns here for the last few minutes. If you've got any questions about that, give us a call at 281-558-5738 or hit us up on Facebook if you like. It seems that one of our callers wanted to ask Jeff about something gun-related over the phone. So I'm going to hand that back to you. And then you hit turn on
your one in the room, so of course he wants to talk to me.
No, I think he just likes the idea of your... Never mind.
Now, what were we talking... Oh,
we were talking about operating systems. Well, let's finish out the Glock operating system because we talked about the nipple, mm-hmm. right? And so there's a nipple on the trigger bar that, as you press that trigger to the rear, deactivates the firing pin block that therefore allows the firing pin to go forward. So that can't happen until you've actually pressed the trigger all the way to the rear, which brings us back to the issue with the double-action, single-action guns.
Yep.
You bypass safeties when you press that trigger to the rear. Mm-hmm. It's especially true on revolvers. That's one of the safety checks for a revolver.
And I still see people at the range who will lower the hammer with their thumb and not using the decocking system that was built into it, specifically because, you know, I've never had an accidental discharge by lowering a hammer on a gun, but I can see if I was sweaty and stressed and had just been in a
fight. I've seen it happen during CHL qualifications.
I'm going to admit
and that
to
was an automatic failure.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, it is. I'll admit to having done it. My very first IPSC match, or USPSA match here in the States, I was new to 1911s. I was scared of the whole hammer down, hammer back thing and thought, oh, that's just dangerous, having that cocked hammer and whatnot. So I tried to lower the hammer. In fact, actually, where my accident happened was actually trying to get the gun out and get it up and running. I'd managed to get the hammer down safely. Problem was, I got my finger and my booger hook and the bang switch all out of whack when I got ready to pull the gun out at the buzzer because I was all excited.
Mm-hmm.
And so I go to cock the hammer, finger gets into the trigger bar, I lose control of the hammer, and strummed around off through a table. And I missed my foot by like 6 inches.
And that's a big foot, too.
That's a big foot, okay? But, yeah, that was also an instant disqualification.
Yeah.
You know, that was the beginning and end of my very first USPSA match.
Had a customer come in about 2 weeks ago, and he and his son were looking at 1911s, mm-hmm. and he asked me to take the Sig Sauer Extreme 1911 off the wall so he could check it out. He wanted to make sure that he could cock it the way that he wanted to, and that meant that he was going to carry it with the hammer down, and then he acts like he's drawing the gun, puts his thumb on top of the hammer, and twirls the gun with his finger inside the trigger guard as he's drawing back on the hammer.
Are we saying actual twirl?
Yes.
As in that, like, cowboy twirl?
RoboCop?
Yeah, it was pulling back on the hammer and rotating the gun backwards at the same time.
Wow.
And that's the way John Wayne would have done it.
Well, and that's how he was trying to tell his son that that's how you carry the gun and that's how you cock the gun.
No.
And I couldn't...
Yes, you could.
Bit my tongue for as long as I could, and then I let loose. It was a torrent. Just
well, no, I mean you can be tactful. About
no,
it.
He can't.
Well, I realize he can't. You know, but yeah, no.
Our job is to educate individuals to do the safe thing, not
that's
to
right.
berate them and belittle them.
That is correct. But when you have somebody twirling a 1911 and telling his young impressionable son that this is the way that this gun is meant to be cocked and loaded, it cocked and shot, it is mind-numbing. And
of course, you don't want to ruin the kid's image of dad.
I tried not to, but I had to let them both
hey,
know that
we
was
let
the
Tynamite
stupidest
think you're still
thing
a cool
I'd
guy.
Ever seen.
Tynamite knows I'm a cool guy.
Okay, so now that we've talked a lot about the DA, or all the different methods of how the guns actually work, one of the things that I'm seeing the most of is people, especially true with new shooters and people who have never shot before, are dying to get their hands on single action only micro 1911 style guns, i.e. the SIG P238 and the SIG P938. That's the micro 380 and the micro 9.
Yeah, I actually saw the micro 9 just recently, and admittedly I think it's a neat concept. The problem is that those are pocket guns. Well, if they're pocket guns, then the way that we carry them kind of makes them not the best idea for carry. I carry a Smith & Wesson Shield in my pocket.
I would, too, if somebody ever sold me one.
I would get you one. We haven't seen one in over 2 months.
Well, back to the
okay. Or I'll be yelling for an hour here.
So, anyway, I'd carry the Smith & Wesson Shield in my pocket, but part of the reason I'm comfortable with that, aside from the fact that I use a holster that does, you know, capture the trigger or at least cover the trigger, is that, you know, I can't accidentally fire that. There's some extra time involved. Then coming back to the smaller guns, none of them that I've seen are designs that inspire confidence in terms of the longevity of the gun, its reliability, or any of that kind of stuff, especially the 380s. And it's not that 380 is inherently bad. It's just that none of the ones that I've seen on the market lately are designs that inspire confidence to me. I mean, the guns are just – they're super lightweight, but they're super lightweight because they're so cheaply built.
They're being made for convenience.
Yeah, you can argue they're made for convenience, but even then, they're not –
Well, that's the thing, is that we understand that guns are not supposed to be convenient. They're supposed to be comforting, not comfortable.
Right.
And so these guns are being made for comfortable.
Yeah, and I get that. The M&P is comfortable to carry. It is. But I can't really recommend those guns. I haven't seen the components on all of them that I've seen have been entirely too small. Part of the reason that the Shield is set apart from me, along with the car, is that the components, the critical components to things like ejection, extraction, feeding the next round, have not been miniaturized with the rest of the gun. Those things are still big enough to handle the full-size cartridge, and the guns run just fine. But when I look at the 938, as neat a gun as it seems to be, it's basically the Colt Mustang slightly beefed up to handle, you know, a 9mm cartridge.
Which is a big step up in pressure and power.
Which is a huge step up. But if you remember the Colt Mustang, its ejector was just a little piece of stamped steel. It was practically a paperclip. Okay? And that's part of the reason those guns never ran very well.
I mean, and they also had a massive problem with magazines just spontaneously falling out of the bottom of the gun.
Magazines falling out of the gun. And eventually, Colt stopped making them because they were a huge liability problem for them because of the single-action triggers. People carried them in their pocket and invariably never carried it inside of a holster. They would just carry it in their pocket, and that little bitty safety in there would get wiped off accidentally. And then some just happenstance, something would touch the person's pants enough to press the trigger, and then it'd go bang. And then the guy's got a 380 in the side of his, you know, in his thigh, and he's complaining to Colt. So I can't. Those are not guns that I can personally recommend. I mean, if you want to buy one just to say that I want to check it out, try it. That's your bailiwick. I'm certainly not going to tell you no.
Now, Colt had actually fixed the problem with the Colt Pony for a little while,
right?
Which I really wanted to buy back in the day and was a neat thing, but unfortunately, Carr sued Colt's Pony right out of existence, because apparently if you crack that thing open,
it looked just like a car.
Yeah, one engineer called another engineer and said, "You stole it all." And apparently Colt was smart enough not even to go to court on that one.
Right.
Colt just tapped out and said, "You know, we're going to lose if we go to court."
Yes. Yeah. Exactly.
Now, the 938 seems like a really cool gun.
Yes.
It shoots. It's pretty snappy. I've had the pleasure of shooting about five or six of them, and I've yet to shoot one that made it through an entire box of ammunition without a minimum of three failures.
And that is absolutely unacceptable. If it's going to be a gun that you are going to carry to defend your life with, it needs to be able to run. And, you know, I don't own a car. I don't own any stock in the company, but those guns do run. And I was pointing out the last time I was at your shop, one of the things I noticed early on, the Carr PM series had plastic magazine catches, and that was always a sticking point for me and one of the reasons I didn't necessarily recommend those guns. The guns, all the current production guns that I've seen, including the ones that are at your shop right now, have a metal magazine catch. So it's metal on metal as far as the way that magazine's being retained. In the earlier guns, it was a plastic magazine catch with a metal magazine. And the metal magazines were chewing up the magazine catches.
Yep.
In my opinion,
they seem to have fixed that issue.
Yep.
You know, talking about Carr, in my opinion, their new C series of guns is probably the best deal on the market right now.
How is Chuck's running? I know Chuck just got one last week up there at the range.
Chuck got one. Mati got one as well.
Yeah.
I think
Chuck's
was running shortly behind. They're running like tanks. And the C series, they don't have the hexagonal barrel.
Right.
They have a pinned-in front sight, and they have laser etching instead of stamping for the logo. And so basically those three
machining processes in the slide, but overall it's
the same gun.
It's
just
the same
a little
gun.
Bit less finishing work.
Reducing the cost of the gun by about $200, $250.
They didn't polish it up as the basic thing.
That's right, and it's a carry gun. It's a tool, and that's something, you know, your carry gun is going to get beat up no matter how hard you try not
to. All of my guns get beat up.
That's right. It's a tool, and people don't understand, you know, if you're a carpenter, you can't have a hammer that looks brand new. It's the same thing with the gun.
Yeah.
And so since it's not all nice and pretty, you don't really mind if you beat the thing up.
Yeah.
And so in terms of best deals on the market right now, if I was looking for a concealed carry gun, I would definitely be aiming towards the Carr C series.
Yeah.
I lean a little bit towards the Shield over the Carr. If I could get a Shield, I would have bought a car already, but I was holding out.
Don't get me wrong. I'll definitely take the Shield over the Carr just because I'm so impressed with
the magazines are the only thing I think is better on the M&P. I like the magazines better than the Shield.
You know, that's the thing I've got.
I like the bigger grip on the Shield.
Yeah.
There's a little more for me to grab hold of. I've got a big hand.
Well, in Chuck's case, he's got this, I think it's not.
CW9.
The CW9. Mm-hmm. That's actually a little bit taller and longer in grip than the Shield.
Mm-hmm.
That said, you know, I still think it's a pocket gun, or potentially. Or some sort of deep carry option. And overall, I like the gun. I didn't have a problem with the trigger. It's not as smooth as other cars, but it's okay. You know?
It's a 300 to 400 round break in on that you know, on that gun and on that trigger. And you know, when you feel the C series, when you rack the slide, man, it's rough. You know, it's pretty hard to do. But once you get that 300, 400, 500 rounds in the gun, it's a beast. It's easy to work with, and it just runs.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So single action only micro carry guns.
I'm not a big fan of them. If that's what you want to carry, go for it. But I'm not.
Most
a big fan
guns,
of
the more you micro them, the more you're giving away reliability.
Right.
All right, now Houston, that's the first hour down of Guns Over Texas. Stick around. We've got about 6 or 7 minutes before we come back with hour number two of Guns Over Texas. If you want to give us a call, you can hit us up at 281-558-5738. That's 281-558-5738. We'll be right back, Houston, with more Guns Over Texas.
From KSEV, the voice of Texas. This is Guns Over Texas. Jeff Sanford and Gary Montgomery are the gun nuts. They believe in America. They fight for your Second Amendment rights. They teach safety, advanced shooting skills, and responsible gun ownership. They just love guns. Guns Over Texas starts now.
Hello, Houston. Welcome back to Guns Over Texas. We're talking guns, CHLs, anything.
Stuff that goes bang.
Stuff that goes bang. Trying to backtrack a little bit and describe what we're talking about for a lot of people that don't understand us. Mm-hmm. So don't understand the lingo. So if you're out there, if there's something you don't understand, feel free. Give us a call. Hit us up on Guns Over Texas Radio on Facebook or GunsOverTexasRadio.com.
One of our listeners is hitting me up now.
Good.
He tells me that I think that guys my size get to use the full-size 1911 as a pocket gun.
So you can give us a call at 281-558-5738. That's 281-558-5738.
I think I have an understanding of why we haven't gotten that many calls today. First off, people are very happy that the Texans, thank God, won. So they're three in a row right now. They won 27-7 against Jacksonville. But unfortunately, there's some of our listeners that are out there with tears in their eyes and a broken heart because Dallas just got spanked, as in spanked, 27-7 by Seattle, no less. So I wonder
were there any monkeys involved?
I'm totally all right with that. Totally all right with that.
I have no problem with that at all because I'm a Houstonian and I'm a Houston Texan fan. And if you're a Dallas Cowboy fan, well, I'm sorry.
They're Yankees up there, man.
That's anything north of Conroe is a Yankee, as far as I'm
concerned.
They're
not Yankees, but they're a little weird. Not quite as weird as Austin.
All right. Now, Houston, I'd like to find out, have you ever drawn your gun in self-defense? And I want to know what the circumstances are. So, Gary, you've had to draw your gun in self-defense.
Unfortunately, yes.
What was the circumstance?
The circumstances were my day job. A lot of you guys know that I'm an IT guy by my daytime profession. It buys bullets, and that's why I do it. But I had to deliver a device to an executive late one night, and I did it in front of the Chase Tower in downtown, if you guys know where that is. Don't work there anymore, so don't have to worry about it.
But, I'm concerned by your use of the term device.
What? It was a device. It was a communications device. It was a BlackBerry. I didn't want to name what it was.
I know, but you made it sound like it was some high tech, like James Bond. Like the device will be left in this.
No, it was just the device came in late in the day, and he had to have it, so I went and delivered it. And that I wasn't even planning to be there the next day, but he just had to have it, so I brought it in late at night, coming back from something else I was doing, and I'd gone. I parked in front of the Chase Tower, and just to kind of set the scene, Chase Tower is the tallest building in Houston, and it is across the street from the old Houston Club building and the original Texas Commerce building, cat a corner to it. And then, of course, there's the tall parking garage, like mm-hmm. a 10-story parking garage next door. So I parked in front of the Chase Tower itself, and there's this raised area that's kind of a park of sorts right in front of the building, and my truck is parked at that corner. And I raced into the building, raced out, planning to hop in my truck and go home. And just for whatever reason, just as I hit the door on my truck, just the hairs on the back of my neck stood up when I was coming back out of the building. And when I turned around, I had a guy who was walking toward me that kind of looked like a cross between JJ and a zombie.
Mm-hmm.
And JJ from like Good Times.
Yeah,
I was wondering how many people under the age of 40 were going to know who you were talking about.
Yeah, I know. But if you've ever seen the old Good Times TV show, this guy really did kind of remind me of JJ. And he's taller than I am, and so I'm looking up at the guy, and he gets to maybe, we'll say, 10 yards away from me, which is entirely too close. But he's 10 yards away, and he's saying something. And the weird thing about this incident is the number of things that I can remember, the number of things I can't remember. And I couldn't really make out what he was saying. But I defaulted to the training that I've had from John Farm and a number of other places where I started, into those tape loops that John tells us about. Sir, I can't help you. Get away from me. Back up. And then my language started getting kind of terse. So I won't, for FCC reasons, I won't get into everything I said, but I did say something to the effect of, you need to back away from me. I carry a flashlight as a matter of habit, and I turned on my high-powered flashlight in his face. That got him to pause or stop for a brief moment, where he, you know, kind of looked down. And I noticed that he had something in his hand that looked like a brick. It was in his left hand. And he looks at the ground for a brief moment, turns, you know, about 90 degrees away from me. And next thing I know, he turns back toward me, starts taking a couple of really big steps, raises his arm with that object in his hand. And I decided he was going to have to get shot because I thought he was about to try to cave in my skull. The other things that were going on at that exact moment in time was there was a guy, there was a bench, and if anybody walks by Chase Tower today, you'll see that same bench is still there. There's an old Asian guy who's been walking around downtown for as long as I can remember. He's maybe 5'8", bushy hair, looks kind of like the Tasmanian devil. But
I think I know who you're talking about,
I bet you do. You've probably seen him. And so that guy happened to be sleeping on the bench, and I didn't realize that's who it was yet, but he sat up when I'm yelling at this guy. So I've suddenly got somebody on the other side of my truck. And the other thing that I noticed out of the corner of my eye is I see two people walking down the sidewalk. And I don't know that these four aren't together. So when this guy starts raising his hand and coming toward me, I decided he needed to be shot because I thought I was going to have to shoot three, four people that night. And I got on this guy's belly button. I started putting pressure on the trigger. It's a Colt 1911 is what I was carrying that particular night. One of these days you'll have to see what that trigger's like. And
it doesn't require much pressure.
It doesn't require much. And this is the incident that pretty much stopped me from carrying 1911s. I have not been comfortable carrying a 1911 since. But the guy started coming toward me. I pointed the gun at him, made the decision to shoot him. And coming back to training, there's a whole thought process. It's amazing how many things can go through your head
in a split second.
In really high stress. I mean, there's a whole conversation you have with yourself. But I got on his belly button, started putting pressure on the trigger, and something went between that front sight and his belly button. And in the moment that it took me to realize that, I also looked at the belly button and moved out from under the front sight. So I tried to reacquire it, tried to get back on it, and it kept moving. It kept moving and finally disappeared. And something just said, you look around. And it's you hear the description of tunnel vision. It's not tunnel vision, at least for me. It is whatever you're looking at gets really huge, and you can't see anything but that. So, you know
what that's like if you've ever had a gun pointed at you.
Yes, exactly. Because then all of a sudden you can see the bullet, and you can tell what brand it is.
Yeah, you can watch that hammer fall back, your drawback at 75 feet away.
And so that's the thing. This belly button is moving away, and I can't get on it. And the training is just. I've been taught, see the bullet, be the bullet. You know, I can hear my mentor saying that. And it's like, you know, you're going to shoot this guy and then start looking for this guy over the top of the truck, work him over, and then possibly shoot these guys coming down the street, depending on whether or not they act like they're in it. And like I said, this belly button kept moving, and I couldn't get on it. Something said, look around, and I realized that the guy's turning to run. And somehow I've got to stop putting pressure on this trigger and not shoot this guy. And fortunately, that's what it turned out. He's turning to run away. And I got my finger off the trigger, put the safety back on, looked around to see, you know, the munchie chi on the other side of the truck. And it's I now can see him and realize, oh, yeah, it's this Asian guy. He's been here for 20 years. He's just, you know, hungry. And the two guys are walking down the street. They're just two drunken club goers. They're just walking by, and so
probably oblivious to everything.
Totally oblivious, because I got in the truck and
to the 6'4" black dude with the gun.
Well, you just fade into the background.
You know, we come back to things that you can't hear. I know that I've been trained to say stop, don't move. You know, I can't remember hearing any of that. I can't remember.
It probably all just came out as whoa.
It may have, but the thing is I can't remember hearing anything until I heard the seatbelt chime in the truck when they turned the truck on, and then drove home. And the weirdest thing about that incident was when I called HPD about it. You know, I didn't call the emergency number. I didn't call 911. I called the non-emergency dispatch number at Central, and was like, you know, I just had an incident in downtown. You know, nobody got shot, but this is what happened, and I'll never forget because I guess it was somebody who just didn't care. But they were like, did you shoot him? I said, well, no. They said, why'd you call?
One of the 2.5, estimated 2.5 million times a year that people use their gun in self-defense.
And nothing happens, and then it's not reported. And
that's
I just couldn't believe it. He goes, why did you call?
So, Houston, have you ever had to draw your gun in self-defense? What was the circumstance? 281-558-5738. That's 281-558-5738. Let's head out to Spring in line one. Dirk, welcome to Guns Over Texas. Dirk, have you ever had to draw your gun in self-defense?
Every Saturday.
Wait a minute.
So what do you want to talk about, Dirk?
I'm a competitive paintballer.
Cool.
No, you say that like you're mocking me.
No, I'm not mocking you at all. I actually think that paintball is pretty neat.
There. I go to war with my brothers on the paintball field. Do you understand?
Okay, Mac.
Oh, Doug got me. Hey, it's funny you're talking about this because I actually had to. I actually drew my pistol on a guy yesterday.
You know,
well,
you seem to get into a lot of trouble, Mac.
Yeah, I know, man.
What was the circumstance?
Well, you know, I don't drive a very inconspicuous vehicle.
I thought you were in a Yugo.
Yes, convertible Yugo. The Slavs make a great car. So anyway, I drive in a stop to wash my car at a car wash, and
well,
I always kind
of.
Well, I know, but I always get kind of excited at the thought that people always get robbed there, so I always double check to make sure that my pistol's loaded and accessible. So I pulled up, and before I even got out of the car, I'm driving up, and some guy ran over to my car, and I was pulling into a bay, but there was a wall. There's only one way in and one way out. You know, there was a wall in front of me, mm-hmm. and I'd have to pull through a turn and pull through a bay to get out.
Gotcha.
And he came running out of the bay and to stop me, you know, putting his hand up, stop. And I had my windows down and stuck his hand through my window. And this whole time I'm watching him, I'm reaching for my pistol in my waist, and I'm thinking, what's he doing? So he starts to reach through my window, and I drew my pistol, and I had to lean backwards because I didn't want him to grab it from me, you know. And I just, you know, like I wanted to say coherently, you know, get away, sir, I can't help you. But what came out was, and so that guy screamed and ran away, and I'm screaming, waving a pistol at the guy. And finally I figured I better just drive out of there.
The image of you screaming and waving a pistol.
Sorry.
You know, I didn't know what the guy was doing. You know, he's running up to the car and you know, with his hand out, telling me to stop. He wasn't, you know, didn't look like a very desirable fella. And so, you know, thank goodness I didn't shoot him or anything. But I drew it out enough to say, the thing that I kept saying was, I kept trying in my head, I was saying this, and I don't know what came out, but in my head I kept repeating, you know, I'm going back to training, you know, and I'm trying to repeat, I can't help you, I can't help you, sir, I can't help you, but I also at the same time got a King of the Hill episode mixed in my head, and I was screaming what Bobby Hill was trained to say in case of an attacker.
I need an adult.
That's not my purse.
And it was, don't touch me there. I don't know you. Don't touch me. I don't know you. Anyway, but
Mac entertains himself.
Thank you for the levity and livening up the studio today, Big Mac.
All right, man. Great show, guys.
We'll talk to you soon.
Bye.
The streets are definitely safer with Mac and his FEG High Point clone roaming the streets in the neighborhoods of Tampa.
I got to give it to him. I'm going to take up for him. He carries a Glock 23, a Gen 4 23.
He finally, okay, has he had it hard chromed?
No.
Has he tried to modify it or make it better in any way, shape, form, or
not
fashion?
Not at all.
Then it'll work.
Not at all. He traded in his 36, his Glock 36 for the 23.
Okay.
Wanted extra ammunition. Yeah, that's right.
Funny how that goes.
That's right.
That's another reason I haven't carried my 1911s in a while. I like having, you know, 15 or 16 rounds to deal with a problem before I go to a slide lock.
All right, let's go out to Northwest Houston and talk to Robert. Robert, welcome to Guns Over Texas. What do you say, Robert?
Hey guys, how y'all doing?
Pretty good, sir. How are you?
Great.
Good. To answer the question first, I guess, I have.
You have drawn your gun? Okay. What was the circumstance?
A road rage incident. A guy behind me, I guess, apparently thought I didn't start moving fast enough. Mm-hmm. When the light turned green, he came around me, and ironically, I wasn't going fast enough for him, but he had time then, I guess, to pull around in front of me and stop and get out and proceed to cuss me and my wife out. Mm. So I was boxed in. I didn't brandish my firearm, but I got it out of the glove box and had it in the lap, and I was boxed in and thinking, I'm not opening the window. I don't want to talk to you.
Yeah.
And I was just pointing down the road, telling him, go on. There's nothing to do here. And he finally got back in his truck, middle of Jones Road and, Eldridge in 1960. He finally decided said what he thought and went on his way.
So another example of 2.5 million times a year that people use their gun in self-defense.
Yes.
And we never hear anything about it.
Right.
So, Robert, what was the purpose of your call? What did you want to talk about today?
Jeff, the owner of the Shield, loaned
yes,
me
sir.
His loaned
that
me
would
the
be
Shield.
You, Jeff.
That's me.
That's you. Okay.
Yes, sir.
My wife and I took you up on that offer and probably put two boxes of shells through it. Mm-hmm. I finally got one here a couple of weeks ago.
Oh, congratulations. You should have bought a lotto ticket that day, too.
Exactly.
Jason wants to know where you got it, because he's just looking at Jeff with just horrid.
It was Carter's Country, and they wanted a little more than everybody else did. They had it.
Well, I can see them for scalper's prices. I just haven't found one at the normal suggested retail price.
They've got a lot of employees to pay for.
Yep.
There was a couple of shops that claimed they were getting them, and so I put my name on a list, even put money down at one, and then their supply dried up.
Mm.
And that's probably been a month ago, and I just out of the blue stopped at a Carter's Country. They had two. And I bought one, and while I was there, a fella bought another one, another 9, and then they had a third one, a 40, and they sold that while I was there.
They cleaned them out, man, in one swift fail swoop.
Yeah.
Yes, they're popular.
Indeed.
So far,
you've been happy with it?
Yes. That's an amazingly easy gun to shoot. I have an XD9 that I really, really like shooting. It works for me. And I have trouble with an XDM-40.
Mm-hmm.
If I really, really take my time, I can do well with it. But the classes you guys used to have on Wednesdays, I guess it was Tactical 1.
Right.
With somebody hurrying me up, I couldn't hardly hit squat with it.
Well, unfortunately, in the real world, bad guys aren't going to hold still and let you take your time and get on there. You kind of have to hurry up. And that's why those classes do come in handy, because they let you realize maybe I need a little bit more practice.
Right. And I was better off with the 9, so that's why I went ahead and got a Shield 9. It's easier to carry than the
X9,
about half as many bullets or less.
Mm-hmm.
But you can carry a whole mess of mags.
Yeah, yes, that's right. Another question is, when will those classes start up again? Those were nice classes, a great bargain, and they were fun.
We're going to get them going again in October.
Okay.
So we've put them on hiatus for a little bit. We're redoing all the AC and ventilation, so we want to make sure that it's cool enough downrange before we get in front of the shooter's boxes again and start doing that.
So you're waiting till winter. it'll be cool enough in front of the boxes.
Well, we're redoing the AC and ventilation for the fourth time, I believe it is now.
Oh, wow.
So hopefully this is finally going to do it to where the entire range will be nice and cool, and people won't be walking out of the classes covered in sweat. So.
Yeah, it got a little warm at times, but it wasn't that bad.
Yeah. I've never had an issue with the heat and cool, except when we do IDPA and there's 25 of us standing in the back range, and then no matter – it's not a – fault of the range. When there's 25 bodies standing back there, it doesn't matter
any
how much that AC is cranking,
hard,
it ain't helping much.
That's right.
But that's a heat load, and you're also trying to exchange the air to clear it. So, that's a big deal. But that was a good class. I took it, I don't know, probably 3 times. It's not the kind of thing where you can take once and say, okay, I've learned that. I'm expert at it. Because each time I picked up and got better at it.
Yep,
that's right. That's
what we were doing.
It really makes you realize what you don't know, for one, and really, it gives you that thirst to come back for more.
Yeah. Every day I learn more about what I don't know. So. That's okay, man.
Well, Robert, we appreciate you giving us a call. And
so is the XDS now available for a loan out?
You know, I've had a couple of them come into the shop this week, and just like the Shield, neither one of them were on the shelf for longer than 15 or 20 minutes.
Wow.
So, but stay tuned. We might have one for you. So
okay.
There's enough demand for it. If I can get a hold of a few, I'll keep one in the rental bag.
There you go.
So thank you, Robert, and we'll be right back with more Guns Over Texas. Welcome back to Guns Over Texas, Houston. The question today is, have you ever drawn your gun in self-defense, and what was the circumstance? Gary's drawn his gun in self-defense. Jason, I know, has drawn OC spray in self-defense.
He's pointing guns at people, of course, doing business.
Daily and weekly event for me pointing guns at somebody. But yes, in actual self-defense, there's probably four or five people in this great city that are alive simply because of the amount of paperwork it would have taken to shoot them.
I know what you mean.
Very easy, clear cut. I could have easily shot them, but I don't go to work with the intention of trying to shoot somebody. I will give them every opportunity to
Thank
stop
Thank goodness
doing...
you would not cut it on the NYPD.
Apparently not. But, you know, you get it's like, you know, please put that down. Put it down. Put it down. Come on, put it. And it's like, dude, I could have shot you four or five times by now. Put it down. And then they finally, I guess, realize the futility of the situation. Most of them, given enough time and enough circumstance, you know, realize that you're not going to get away. It's not going to happen. Put down whatever it is you've got in your hand, and we'll, you know, it'll be a lot easier.
Well, you know, that begs another question there, in that, you know, what is a reasonable amount of time to, you know, and how long does it take you to make this decision as to whether or not you're going to poke a hole in somebody?
The very first one that's coming under my head was we had to arrest somebody that had an open warrant for kitty diddling type stuff.
Oops.
But when we went to pick him up, it was at a restaurant. I won't give the name of the restaurant, but we knew he worked there. We knew that, you know, he was back in the back as one of the cooks. We went back there, and as we went back there and went on either side of the counter to kind of box him in, he picked up one of the frying pans that had all the flame shooting out of it and was holding about a 10-inch cast iron frying pan that had flame shooting about a foot in the air.
Yeah.
And he's looking at one end of the counter. I'm about 10 to 15 feet in one side, and my partner's about 10 to 15 feet on the other side. And so you need to put the pan down and come over here and talk to me. And he held the pan, and I said, put the pan down. And he just sat there, and he kind of smiled at me, and I drew down on him and pointed the gun. I said, I'm going to – you know, it's about to get unpleasant. Put the pan down.
Just got real, man.
And I honestly think, as he's looking back and forth, he's thinking, which one of these guys is going to be easier to outrun, and I'll throw the pan at the one that looks faster, and then I'll try to run away from the one that looks slower, the look on his face.
But throwing the pan is deadly force.
It's a pan full of flaming oil? Oh, heck yeah.
And so I don't know. There's a lot of folks I know that...
There's probably 25 people in this kitchen. Mm-hmm. There's probably 50 people out front mm-hmm. in the restaurant. And I've only been doing this for a couple of weeks at this time. And it's like, do I really, you know...
Want to light this guy up?
Can
in the
I
kitchen?
Really, you know, it's like... And part of me is going, I know I can light this guy up because he's not following commands and he's presenting a deadly force threat. But
yeah.
I really don't want to shoot somebody.
Considering what y'all were there to pick him up for...
Yeah.
I think it's unfortunate.
There's a whole lot of people going, man, why didn't you pop him?
He sat there and looked for a minute, and my partner yelled at him in Spanish, and then I started yelling at him in Spanish too. And I think he could get maybe he gets a pass on. He didn't quite understand the English, but he definitely understood me pointing the gun at him. And that definitely
you know, yeah, that's a universal that's, language.
Yeah,
there,
universal
dude.
Language.
But he put the pan down and stepped away from the frying pan and laid down on the ground. So it went much easier for him.
All right, let's head out to Cleveland and talk to David, well, formerly of Cleveland. David, welcome to Guns Over Texas. What do you say, David?
Hey, guys. You know, I moved from Houston out here to Highlands,
mm-hmm.
and, yeah, I'm definitely still David formerly from Cleveland.
Now, how is your shrapnel wound healed up, David?
Oh, you know what? Everything's fine. Everything's good. As a matter of fact, I don't even think about that much anymore.
I wouldn't well, either. I just get mad about it.
you know, the thing about it is, it's, you know, mistakes are made. Hopefully the people learn from their mistakes if they didn't. And I haven't seen them. But,
well, that's probably fortunate for them. And for those that are listening that don't know, David caught some shrapnel from somebody doing something stupid at a local indoor range. Mm. So, now, David, have you had to draw your gun in self-defense?
I have. Did not last very long. I did it one time. And the guy was just, he was being crazy. He started slamming on his brakes. He started doing some really nasty stuff.
Road rage. Yep.
Yeah, and so I pulled over.
It's amazing how brave people get in the car.
And
go on.
He did not keep going. He pulled over right in front of me, and I stepped out. I pulled it out, but the thing is, he was about 30, 40, 45 feet away from me.
Hmm.
Now, if somebody is right at my window, and I heard that this is the reason why I called. If somebody is at my window,
mm-hmm.
reaching in my car, there mm-hmm. is no way I'm pulling a gun. There's no way I'm thinking about a weapon other than
driving off,
grab on, and drive until they can't keep up with the car and let go.
I think we're still at deadly force at that point, though.
It is, but I can't disagree.
There was no firearm involved.
Yes.
You know.
Well, I mean,
hey,
he
didn't grab him. The guy was trying to get in the window when he drove off. It's all in
he
how you present.
He got his hand stuck in my steering wheel. I was
that's right.
And, you know, the whole thing is, even if I'm not in my car, if you were within a certain amount of reach of me and I feel a threat, I'm not going for a weapon. I'm going for you. You're coming at me. I'm coming at you. And we're going to have a very obscene situation. And the thing is, I don't care if I've got to put a thumb in something that doesn't need a thumb in it. I don't care. It doesn't matter. The thing is, I survive to make sure that my children, my girlfriend, my ex-wife, has me to provide for them. Well, not my ex-wife, my children.
that had me wondering, man.
Well, the thing is, you know, I mean, you've got to provide for your family. What I like about Gary is, you know, I mean, you've gone in, you've started doing a bunch of different stuff, you started working out with a bunch of different situations. I want to come out there and start working out with y'all guys. I mean, that's awesome. I've been to Shiloh. I've been to a bunch of different places. I'm a former mixed martial artist, and the thing is, you have to be able to protect yourself, whether it is firearms or not.
And, yeah, it doesn't have to just be firearms. You know, with everything that's going on in the world these days, we're embarking on some dark days ahead of us. And I think a lot of people have their head in the sand about that. But now is the time that you need to get off your butt and get yourself into shape. Yeah. Because we are headed into some trying times.
Well, I mean,
you're absolutely right. Absolutely.
We talk about guns.
Is this mic on?
Yeah, I think so.
Now it's on.
So, well, we talk about guns all the time, and yeah, we're a gun show, but the reality is that our introduction to a fight for our lives may, in fact, be picking ourselves up off the floor and having to, you know, fight our way to a gun.
Mm-hmm.
Or we may just have to deal with something so quickly that a gun doesn't come into play. Or there's just simple fact that the level of force that's required may not jump to deadly force. And generally speaking, now, me as a concealed handgun instructor, I typically tell people that I'm not a big fan of the idea of drawing our guns and pointing them at people unless we're generally justified in shooting them in the first place. Because there's no two ways about it. That is an escalation of force. It may be necessary, but if we can avoid it, we should avoid it. It's a last resort kind of thing. I would rather not point a gun at somebody because that in and of itself is aggravated assault. And whether or not it was reasonable comes down to not my thoughts, but what a jury thinks. And I have a lot easier time justifying having to go hand to hand with somebody, you know, using force to push them away from me versus pointing a gun at them.
Mm-hmm.
you know, that's just me.
Let's head out to Spring and talk to Ken. Ken, welcome to Guns Over Texas. What do you say, Ken?
Nylon, man. What's shaking?
Hey, SOS, different pile, that's all.
Right? Like, now, I got nothing glamorous about this. I apologize for that flush. I may have just heard. But anyway. Well, I guess you know that.
That was our careers going down the toilet. Yes.
I was waiting a little while. I had to go. Nothing glamorous or anything, really. It was bow season a few years back, and it was on the way to deer lease, and stopped by one of the big box stores up there on 45, thinking, well, I forgot something. Went in there to see if I could remember what I forgot, because I couldn't remember what I forgot. But anyway, in there maybe 15 or 20 minutes, I come out, and there's his head bopping up and down in my truck, and I'm like, yeah, great, here we go again. Truck's been broke into a lot. Mm-hmm. But I'm like, hey, get out of there. And guy comes out, and he's got one of them foot-and-a-half-long flat-blade screwdrivers and coming toward me. I'm like, stop, expletive, expletive.
Right.
And drew at that point. And I'm thinking, oh, hell, okay. Well, I got a Glock 33, so it would have zipped him pretty dang good. But he stopped, and there was one of the employees in the parking lot behind me, getting a card or something, but he's like, man, what's going on? Of course, you know, some high school age kid or something. I'm like, call the police. Well, he boogies on into the store, and in the meantime, the guy's just standing there, and I'm like, don't move, stay right there. Well, he proceeds to drop the screwdriver and doing these gradual steps back, and ends up just getting in the vehicle and boogieing out, and I'm like, well, I'm thinking about this. Well, he dropped the screwdriver, so I guess I'm no longer justified. He's not coming thing, but
well,
he left.
You did the right thing,
the
then.
Description of the vehicle, everything. Mm-hmm. Depressing thing is, 45 minutes later, Madam Constables shows up along with another deputy from Harris,
mm-hmm.
and yeah, they're kind of debating on who wants to take the report. The deputy sheriff says, you should have dropped that Mike Foxtrot. Mike Foxtrot. I'm being
polite
for real. But yes. As soon as you saw her in his truck, and I'm like, yeah, you can't get blood out. You ask anybody on death row, that'll mess up the interior right quick.
Well, the bad thing is with responding officers, I just had to have this conversation with someone earlier today. If you call the police and tell them something is in progress, that changes the dynamic of things significantly. If you call them and tell them the guy was just here doing bad things and he ran away, well, police calls happen on priority basis, and in progress is always going to take precedence over something just happened 5 minutes ago.
Exactly, so, and I have no idea what the kid might have gone and, you know, tried to locate a manager to call or something like that. There's no telling. Obviously, they didn't say anything about gun or now.
That does get police attention.
Yeah, I'm like, damn. And, you know, the crazy thing is the dude used that big screwdriver to bust the passenger side door lock. And I'm like, you know, why couldn't he come to the driver's side? That lock didn't work anyway from other folks. Yeah, that's crazy, man.
Ken, we appreciate you calling us, man, and we appreciate you contributing to the show. And also, we appreciate you coming and hanging out at the range. It's always a good time having you in, Ken.
Anytime. My mommy loves you.
Whoa.
Your mom is great, man. We love to see women coming in and shooting, enjoying themselves and having a great time.
She handled that little 38 air weight really well. I was surprised she went back for more, considering her, you know, arthritis and MS and all that.
Hey, man, she's like more man than me when it comes to that gun, because I do not like shooting
more
that
man
gun at all.
She can out cuss you,
his
I can tell you that.
Hey, I've seen her cuss at you, man. I don't doubt that at all. So
she taught me well.
We appreciate you, Ken. Thanks for calling.
All right,
let's head out to Katie, line two. Dave and Katie, welcome to Guns Over Texas. What do you say, Dave?
Hey, yeah, I had one. Actually, I've had a couple, but two. But the one I wanted to talk about was, this was probably about 7-8 years ago. I was driving down the freeway, and I had this one, two of them, you know, nothing around. So I hadn't seen a vehicle in probably about an hour. Mm-hmm. And next thing I know, I've got two of them built up off-road rigs on me, one in front, one in back. The one in back kicks on as the off-road lights. The one in front kicks on as bed lights. So now I'm blind front and back. I go to get out in the middle, and there's a third one on the side of me trying to push me into the median strip.
No, that's not good.
Yeah.
So what did you do?
Well, fortunately, I'd been out plinking earlier that day. I didn't have anything better than a High Point, unfortunately. It was just one of them 995 carbines. But the sight of it sent the one on the side of me out of my way to where I could get clear.
Yeah, that's a pretty mean-looking little gun, man.
Yeah. Well, I kept it around in my truck for farm pests.
Mm-hmm.
But, yeah, I mean, it was the only thing I had at the time, but, I mean, I didn't see any other way out of that when I'm being pushed into concrete.
Now, Dave, did you call the police and let them know what was going on?
No cell. I didn't have a cell at the time, and I didn't get to my destination for another 2 hours, by which point, you know, I didn't have any descriptions of the vehicle, because I was blind.
Right.
You know?
That's a bummer.
Well, it's always best in that situation if you can call the police, make sure to call them and let them know, because what's stopping that guy who's road raging against you from calling to report you? So
right.
I always want to make sure that you call and report what has happened.
But, you know, three vehicles organized trying to run you off the road for no reason is not a common occurrence.
Yeah. Well, who did you make mad, Dave?
I haven't a clue. The other one was real simple. My wife and I went to an amusement park, and you know how it is when you take the whole family. You know, you get two or three vehicles loaded up with people. We went to go through the drive-thru at the end, but not everyone had cash. So I had to swap some money around with some people. Some loser in the parking lot saw us swapping cash around, decided that I was a drug dealer. Decided to come up and harass me, trying to find out what I had to sell.
Now, did you have?
And he's banging on the window of the truck, and I'm like, "Get away from my truck!"
So, what did you have? What gun did you have?
At that time, I had my 1911.
Okay, good, a little easier to swing around than a High Point carbine.
I didn't present it. I had it in my lap, ready to go, and fortunately, he went away.
All right. Did you call the police on that one?
Actually, there was an officer in the parking lot, in the back lot of the restaurant.
All right, and you let him know?
Yep.
Good job, Dave. I had a way to be a good good Texan. Use your gun.
Good
let
citizen.
The police know.
Yep.
So, Dave, we appreciate you calling. We appreciate you contributing to Guns Over Texas. Now, Houston, we got to take a quick commercial break, but we'll be right back. If you're on hold, hold on just a minute longer because we're coming straight back to the phone lines. This is Guns Over Texas. Back to Guns Over Texas, Houston. If you want to get involved in the conversation, we're talking about drawing your gun in self-defense. Have you ever done it? What were the circumstances? Do you have your concealed handgun license? If you don't, you can get your concealed handgun license at Shiloh Indoor Shooting Range. Two licenses for $150 on special right now. So if you don't have it, get it. 281-444-8930. All right, now let's head right out to the phone lines. And let's go to Katie and talk to Karen. And Katie, Karen, what do you say, Karen?
Good afternoon, guys. How are y'all?
How you doing?
Fantastic. Karen? Pleasure to have you on.
Thank you. I have had to draw a weapon once, and I was very young, so I did not have my CHL at the time. I was about 13 years old. I was at home, and I had a guy breaking into my bedroom window. And instead of going and getting my parents, I went and got my shotgun, and which was a pump, and loaded it with three shells. And I stood in front of my bed, in front of the closet, and I could see the gentleman coming in through my window quite well because of the silhouette from the street lamp. And I waited until the gentleman got all the way in the house. And I knew what his intentions were because his pants were around his knees.
Ooh.
You keep saying gentleman. I think you're misphrasing
the
word.
No, there's not a gentleman.
The word turd is appropriate in this scenario.
Well, yes. I also have my son in my husband's car behind me. So I'm trying to keep it reasonably clean. Okay?
Okay.
But
yes, you officer.
The gentleman had his breeches down around his knees. And at that point, you know, I had my pump. I slid the chamber and ejected one shell out. So at that point, I had two. Well, there's no mistaking the sound of a pump sliding shotgun.
Yes.
And I told him, I said, I've got two now. I'm going to start with the one. I've got two shells left. I'm going to blow both of your heads off, starting with the one below your waist. The gentleman proceeded to fall out the window backwards.
Wow.
Funny how that works.
Your parents let you keep a shotgun in your room at 13?
No, I went and got it out of the locked cabinet.
Yeah. I was about to say, that's some pretty permissive parents right there.
Well, you know, back in the day, that wouldn't have been all that unusual.
Or a good country girl, yeah.
I am a country girl, but I knew where the key was and where the ammo was because I grew up hunting. So.
Good girl.
Good for you, Karen.
And we're glad you have such forward-thinking parents as opposed to the people today that helicopter over their children and don't let them wipe their nose without permission.
That's right. So. Well, Karen, you did a great thing. And, you know, I'm sure when he dove out that window, his pants were probably a little bit further down from being filled with something.
The only thing I'm going to complain about is people like this typically don't get fixed. And unfortunately, just because you set him back, you know, he might have gone home and been scared for a month, and then 2 months later he was back out peeping in somebody else's window. Unfortunately.
Probably so. But at least I was safe. And
yes, ma'am.
That was the only thing as a 13-year-old knew what to do besides wake up mom and dad, and I did not want to do that. Mm-hmm. I figured I could take care of the situation myself.
Yeah.
I did.
Dad, I wanted to make sure you got plenty of sleep, but last night I almost shot somebody at the window. I didn't think it was important enough to wake you up, though.
Oh, it'd have woke him up if she'd have shot him, though.
Yeah. And my father just now learned that that my husband and I both have our CHLs, and he is now considering getting his.
Good for him.
Good for him. So. We appreciate you calling, Karen, and we appreciate your contribution to the show, as usual.
Well, thank you very much. Well, y'all have a good evening.
You too, Karen. Thank you.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
All right. Now let's head out to Southwest Houston and talk to Mary. Mary, welcome to Guns Over Texas. What do you say, Mary?
Hello. I just wanted to say something about my dad. I was raised in the 50s, mm-hmm. and my father, who was a oil and gas lawyer in a small town, kept an arsenal of weapons in a closet mm-hmm. in our house. It was not locked. We were instructed never to open it, never to go in there. Mm-hmm. And if we did...
there was the price
held today.
Spanked the tar out of us.
Yes.
But, so we never opened it. We never went near it. We were trained to use guns as teenagers. We were given guns, mm-hmm. As gifts. He worked out with weights. He ran. He used a bow and arrow in the backyard. He was a sharpshooter. And I felt so secure as a child. My father was not only my provider, he was also our protector. And I think it added a lot to my emotional security mm-hmm. as a person that no matter what happened, he could take care of it single-handedly. Mm-hmm. And I never doubted his ability to provide for his family or protect his family.
And unfortunately, it's something that we don't see enough of these days, right. I think. Mm-hmm.
The only problem is, what if Dad's not home? That would be the only issue I would be worried about.
You know, I had an older brother, and, you know, he was trying to, you know, take care of things in his absence. And I will say that the oil field services company he worked for had 8 men captured from a well by terrorists in Libya mm-hmm. In 1972. It was never in the press because they wanted to get these men back. And he volunteered and went carrying guns and cash to negotiate their return, and they were all returned successfully.
That's hardcore.
That is.
Yeah.
That is. Yep. Now, Mary...
He was that kind of guy, and when I, you know, think about my dad, he's deceased now, you know, I really see him as a very, very capable, self-reliant human being who protected us and also provided very well for us. And I'm grateful for that.
Well, Mary, are you shooting guns yourself now?
No, I have a gun in my home that I can use if need be, but it's not my thing personally.
Mm-hmm.
I'm just commenting on, as a child, I think I was given a great deal of security on all levels by my father.
Well, he sounds like he was one heck of a good guy.
Yep.
So, Mary,
tough guy.
Yeah.
The and way, he had no
there's not many men like that these days anymore.
He had no discipline problems with his children.
I bet.
I would guess not.
Mary, we appreciate you calling us. We appreciate you sharing the story. And thank you for listening to Guns Over Texas. All right. Now, have you guys happened to have heard about the new 100-yard indoor rifle range at Shooter Station?
I have heard of it. I have not seen it.
Awesome. It is awesome. It is something else. And actually, I'm going to try to get the owner of Shooter Station to join us next week to talk about the range a little bit. It is, when you talk about state-of-the-art and just plain nice, mm-hmm. He has really built something quality over there.
Cool.
And so we're looking forward to having him on. And actually, TexasGunTalk.com is going to be hosting a range meet and greet. And they're going to be doing that at Shooter Station. I cannot remember the date for the life of me right now off the top of my head. So you can go to TexasGunTalk.com and find that. Gary, I've got a question for you.
No.
Jason.
Okay, I'll answer
the question.
I would
love to participate in the show.
Well, you're going to have to pull yourself off the ESPN or whatever.
No, he's been looking at over there. He's been looking at a site.
Football.
Yes.
We call that football.
We're calling it football, yes.
That's what you want to call it.
But, you know, it's amazing that when the game was on, first hour, we had not a single caller. And then as soon as the Cowboys got stomped, thank goodness, and the Cowboy game went off, and boom, we have 9 or 12 callers in a row.
Now, I've noticed something, Jason. The M&Ps, Smith & Wesson Military and Police models,
yes,
that have been coming into the range lately, no longer have stainless stamped on the slide.
Mm-hmm.
What could be causing that?
They're not stainless.
The
maybe.
Fact that they still rust, even though they say stainless,
yeah,
on them?
Yeah, that's. I've got the M&P VTAC,
mm-hmm,
which is their $750 polymer gun, which is... It's a price
you bought a
to
pimp
pay.
Gun.
No, the Generation 1 was the pimp gun. It came with a gold slide, and so I thought that was awesome.
That was
so,
the C-3PO gun.
Yeah. And okay, then when mine arrived, it was flat, dark earth. I wanted
like it
the
was
gold.
Supposed to be.
Yeah.
Baby poo.
I wanted the gold, though.
Okay.
But, yeah, mine's got some rust issues. One of the other instructors at Shiloh Shooting Range, Mahdi, had one that had rust issues that he had to send back. So... what's the deal? These are good guns.
People who buy their gun and who, if they carry it outside of their waistband, such as like police officers in a duty belt or something like that, it's probably not going to have the issues. When something is continuously pressed up against the skin in a Texas summer, the amount of sweat, salt, and body oils, you have no idea how corrosive your body is.
That's the thing. My VTAC, I carry in a Safariland ALS holster while I'm at work.
Right.
My carry gun is the Shield.
Wow. And you were getting it like that? I know Monty carries inside the waistband, which is I know how his happened.
Yeah, he does.
Yours was outside of the waistband?
Mine is outside
well,
of the
yeah,
waistband.
But the reality is that, you know, we have enough ambient humidity in,
yes,
Texas that depending on the alloys that are involved, even with stainless steel, it may rust while you watch.
Mm-hmm.
I've got a Colt Commander that... It's a stainless Colt Commander from.
It's not stain proof. It just
stains
less.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And if you talk to anybody who knows anything about metallurgy, that's one of the things they'll tell you about stainless steel is that yes, there's a chromium content that reduces its tendency to stain or to rust, but it doesn't eliminate it.
So are they using cheap metal in their guns?
It's not necessarily cheap metal. It could be. You know, you have to keep in mind that they buy steel in a number of lots, and, mm-hmm, and so there's always going to be some variation. Now they can ask for a certain content of molybdenum and carbon and all the components that make up steel. But there will always be some variation, and it can be that variation is enough to cause it to rust.
There you have it, Houston. Another 2 hours of Guns Over Texas down. Now, we'll be back same time next week, 5 p.m., with more Guns Over Texas. If you have any questions or comments that we weren't able to get to on the air, you can always get us on Guns Over Texas Radio on Facebook and GunsOverTexasRadio.com.
And shoot us emails. Jeff, at not that you ever check it.
I have checked it this week.
GunsOverTexasRadio.com, Gary at GunsOverTexasRadio.com, or Jason at GunsOverTexasRadio.com.
And if you don't have your CHL yet, get it now, two for $150 at Shiloh Indoor Shooting Range, 281-444-8930. That's going to wrap it up for this week's Guns Over Texas. Shoot straight, Houston.